your host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockey PDOcast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me is my good buddy, Sean Shapiro. Sean, what's going on, man?
It is fine. We've made it through. We've made it to July, and I get to not. I don't have to fly to either Florida or Nevada anytime soon. So I'm happy to have my feet on the ground right now. So we'll just say it that way.
Nice. Well, we are certainly, we made it to July, which is awesome. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We're going to do our free agency recap draft as well. Haven't done a show in a week, kind of waited for everything to come into place. Apologies to all the listeners. I've gotten some messages wondering why we haven't been doing any shows the past couple of days. And I was out on the island with the family and did not have reliable internet or recording space. So I had to wait till I got back home. But luckily it's July 3rd. We have pretty much, I think, all the important news. We might see some trades the rest of the way this offseason, but I think all the big stuff is kind of out of the way. And so we're going to break it all down here today. Also joining us to make this a three-man panel, bringing back the band from the trade deadline recap earlier this year, which was a big hit amongst the listeners, is also our good pal, John Mattis. John, how's it going, fellow?
Going well. And yeah, it's not a mega pod if Sean and I are not in attendance, correct? So let's do this.
This is going to be a fun one. Hope we'll see. I'm less ornery today than I think I was that after the trade deadline, because we were doing that the night of, and Sean made the great mistake of asking me how I was doing. And I just unleashed him and told him my true inner thoughts and how tired I was. Still a little bit tired. It feels weird to be talking about hockey in July, but there's some really fun stuff for us to discuss. So we're going to go through it. And this is going to be really serve as kind of like the bookend for the 23-24 NHL season for us. So let's have some fun with it. Sean, I'll give you the floor here first. What's the first either team or kind of trend or story that really caught your eye over this past week? You were at the draft, you were kind of talking to people there, but also, you know, all the spending we saw in free agency on the open market as well.
Yeah.
Who's your either big winner or loser or just notable takeaway to get us started?
My biggest one, and this is both geographically tied to where I am, and it's just the biggest still question mark I don't understand, is what is Detroit doing? That was my biggest kind of takeaway right off the bat. And part of that means I'm based in Detroit and everything like that. But we see Steve Yzerman going out of his way to pay a sweetener, which made no sense at all to me, to dump Jake Walman, and then go and say, there's been all these rumblings that there's some big move, there's some big next move for the Iser plant and in the terminology and everything like that. And we're sitting here on July 3rd. And as of right now, Steve Yzerman still hasn't spoken on free agency yet. And I've been told multiple times by Red Wings PR that, well, Steve only likes to speak when he's done. So I have no idea what done means or where it's going. But just from where I'm sitting right now, both like in an actual physical sense, about 30 minutes from where the Red Wings play, and in a headspace sense, I have no idea, like trying to get a sense of where is this big move we were promised by the insiders that the Red Wings are going to go roaring back to the playoffs. As someone has said, like, where is the big payoff that we were all told was coming from Steve Yzerman? That's kind of been biggest thing on my space, and obviously a little bit biased to where I'm sitting right now.
Especially since the initial kind of fallout from that Walman deal, I think everyone assumed, all right, they're clearing the deck here to really make a big splash in free agency in particular, right? They were linked to Gensel. They were linked to Stamkos. They were linked to pretty much any available big name free agent. And they really, I'm not sure if it's even fair to say they swung and missed, because I'm not even sure ultimately how hard they pursued any of those guys. I'm sure they made their pitches, but you look at it now on July 3rd, what do they have to show for their work, right? They brought back Patrick Kane on a one-year deal with some bonuses involved. They brought in Erik Gustafsson. They added some goalie depth. But beyond that, they didn't really make any big moves. And I'm wondering, do you have a sense of like how much of this is just kind of a bit of a holding pattern, because there's so much uncertainty with the Mo Sider and Lucas Raymond extensions, particularly if they're going to, which I assume, make a push to go long-term on both and actually buy up meaningful UFA years. That's going to come with a pretty inflated AAV, right? And so in that case, you look at it and all right, they have 21 million or so in cap space right now. A pretty big chunk of that is going to be devoted to just those two guys if they actually do go long term with them as opposed to a bridge. So how much of it is that, and how much do you think it is really Steve Yzerman still kind of lurking behind the scenes and waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is definitely the Seider and Raymond contracts. There's been, I wrote about this last week, where one of the big things that other people have said, because Steve is so very, keeps everything close to the vest, he's basically the next generation's Lou Lamoriello. Someone had to take on the title right now. So it's, we don't really know what Steve is actually thinking, because I don't even think he lets everyone within the Red Wings organization know what he's thinking. But talking around and everything like that, there's a lot of teams who Yzerman has been playing things a little bit slower because he wants to get these deals done and see what the cap is going to look like with these Raymond insider deals. And so I guess that's a sort of excuse for how this is playing, where you could kind of be like, well, these things take time and everything like that. But at the same time, and maybe there's some 3D chess move that Red Wings fans keep telling me is going to happen on Twitter. And fine, if it happens, great. I'll give a nice golf clap for it. But I think it's kind of, part of it is you tried to posture for the cap space, and he probably was in. He definitely, I bet they tried to get Gensel. I bet they tried to talk to Stamkos. And at the end of the day, they weren't the destination. And as no one in Detroit will ever say it, but I think they missed out on plan A and B, and now plan C is kind of scramble and see what happens. And that's kind of my read on it. And once again, that's one of those weird things where, like, with how Yzerman operates, if he's not going to speak until he's quote unquote done, I don't know what done even means right now. Like, that's kind of one of the weirdest things about trying to get a whole read on this, because like other GMs, I mean, I don't know, John, how many GMs haven't spoken on July 1st yet? I don't know if there's any of the other 32. I don't know how many actually haven't spoken yet, but I would imagine it's a very small list.
No, absolutely. And one thing that kind of jumps out to me in terms of the moves that he actually did make is bringing in Cam Talbot when you already have Ville Husso and Alex Lyon in your crease. And then obviously Jack Campbell, he's not a serious contender for an NHL job, but you know, obviously they signed him with the hope that maybe he'll step in and, you know, catch lightning in a bottle. But does that mean Ville Husso is on his way out? That kind of tickles me in terms of possibilities there, because correct me if I'm wrong, but the three goalie system didn't go too well last year, did it? Right. And
no,
you know, it seems that seems like a 1 year thing. I don't think you ever want to like have three goalies all the time.
Yeah. And well, Detroit did it 2 years in a row. It was the 2 years ago. It was Magnus Helberg was the third guy in, remember? And then this year it was Alex Lyon and James Reimer and Ville Husso. And Husso's still making $4.75 million against the cap this year. And like, if it cost you a second round pick, and if it cost Steve Yzerman a second round pick to move Jake Walman, in theory, if I'm another team, what am I going to ask Steve Yzerman for your $4.75 million chronically injured goalie? Like it's not like that's a desirable asset. Now, maybe there's, you can just future considerations him. I mean, Dallas just dumped Radek Foxa for nothing to St. Louis, but the Husso thing is a great point, where the way like Cam Talbot came in to start, we know that. And they really like Lyon kind of as a B, and Campbell is really the reclamation, split the net with Sebastian Kosa type guy this year. So Husso is the one who I don't see where he fits. And when Yzerman did last speak, he kind of said, oh, I didn't really like the three goalie system. So there is a shoe that has to drop there, but it's not a desirable shoe for any other team with Husso's contract.
You know, maybe we're looking at it all wrong, though. I'm sure an element of it was clearing out money. I think they also did sort of make a point of bringing up the fact that I think it was also to clear a roster spot, and particularly a spot on the defense for full-time Simon Edvinson, other young guys to at least have an opportunity to go up. And
you still have Justin Hall. You still have Justin Hall, who your coach wouldn't trust at all to play last year. And
yeah, like I think part of it was roadblocked by a lot of the no move clauses and stuff that were handed out along the way, right? And in terms of particularly getting a Walman to San Jose, I'm with you. Obviously, it was incredibly puzzling decision. I did like, you know, they essentially replaced Shane Gostisbehere, who went to Carolina, with Erik Gustafsson on this 2x2 deal, and I immediately made sure to message Eric Gustafson's agent and tell him that Eric Gustafson needs better representation, because I don't know how this guy keeps signing these below market deals, as you know, certainly not an, he's an imperfect defenseman, right? He's going to make mistakes. There's going to be turnovers, yeah. Lapses in defensive zone coverage. Saw him in the, with the Rangers, like still a very skilled guy who can make plays at a position where it's hard to find those guys. And we saw far inferior and less talented players and guys who are going to make less of a difference on your team get even better deals, because I think they represent this sort of physical defenseman that teams are still coveting. And yet Gustafson just keeps getting these deals where it's like, how is he not getting, how is there not more demand for this guy? I don't get it. Good for the Red Wings that they were able to get him. But yeah, if 2 years from now, if Gustafson's still playing at this level, I will gladly represent him in his next negotiations. You know, similar to this, I kind of had these teams lumped together as sort of the quote unquote next gen Atlantic teams, right? And I think we can lump the Sabres in this as well. They were a bit more active, but if you look at a lot of the moves they made, they bring in Lafferty, Ube Kubel, they trade for Malenstein, they bring in Zucker on a one-year deal. It's kind of like guys who are going to have specific roles, particularly in the bottom six and even the fourth line more specifically. And I think part of that is an acknowledgement on their part that they have sort of the young guys atop the lineup up front, and they're hoping for those guys to take another step and keep developing and solidify those roles. And so they want to supplement them with sort of veteran glue guy types. But after they bought out Skinner in particular, John, I felt like I was waiting for some other big move. Now, I think people will tell you, all right, it's the Sabres. They're probably not going to do a lot of, you know, big name shopping in the free agent market. But that's why you look and they still have about 18 or 19 million in cap space. A lot of that will go to Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen on his next deal. But I still feel like I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with them on the trade market, and we'll see if it happens. But I'm kind of curious for your take on sort of their relative lack of aggression, I guess. And in particular, it felt like all the Sabres fans I follow were sort of hoping they would really push some chips in and sort of make a concerted effort to improve this team so they can finally take a next step this coming season. And they didn't really do so yet. I think it's still TBD because they have a lot of flexibility, but they haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I think the Sabres are a perfect example of, you know, they're, both sides have to agree to the deal, right? So similar to what the Winnipeg Jets deal with, a lot of players just don't want to come to Buffalo just flat out. It doesn't matter what's going on, what the money is, they're just not interested. So they're sort of dealing, you know, they're running a race where they're behind at the starting line. And I just feel like they settled for a lot of, you know, bottom six pieces, a lot of just guys that you can kind of find on the wire more or less. And it's a little disheartening if you're a Sabres fan, because one, we're up to 13 years of no playoffs. And two, you know, the core is tantalizing. It is exciting to join this group, or at least it should be. I mean, last year kind of things went downhill at the end there, and the vibes turned from immaculate to not great. But this is kind of like, this is a pocket where they should be able to attract free agents, and they're unable to at the moment. You know, Jason Zucker, I guess that's a decent signing as far as just plugging a player that will be able to impact you. Your game night to night. But I, you know, if I'm a Sabres fan, I'm completely disappointed by how things have unfolded and how, like Winnipeg, you really have to draft and develop well, because the free agents just don't seem to want to come there. And, you know, I don't know if we want to get into the Skinner buyout, but like, I obviously he was overpaid at $9 million, but they bought out a top six player and then kind of, we're looking for a top six player after. And it's not like they're right up against the cap where it's like, oh, if we buy out Skinner, then we're going to have this room to bring in this guy. It's like, no, you bought him out and then you didn't use that money on someone else. So it's a little strange in that aspect. And Kevin Adams, I would say, is not off to the greatest start in his offseason.
It well, kind of reminded me, real quick on the Skinner thing, it kind of reminded me of, I was talking to someone the other day, Ron, like right on the eve of July, on the first, we were talking about the draft, and someone who works as, who is a former NHL GM and is no longer a GM, but still works for a team. And I was talking to him at the draft, and he basically made the kind of offhand joke of like, we all do everything within our power to get out of all these bad deals just so we can give as many more bad deals as we can on July 1st. And that's exactly what this whole Skinner deal felt like to me, where it's like you do everything in your power to get out of the contract that's overpaid, only to be like, I've got all this money, I've got all this, and then you do that. So that's just what I was kept thinking about after having this conversation with somebody at the draft on Saturday there.
You're burying the lead. I can't believe you had a one-on-one conversation with Peter Chiarelli.
It was not Peter Chiarelli.
There's certainly a long laundry list of guys it could have been. Yeah, I think, John, you and I have been kind of talking about this in our messages, particularly this past year as the year was going along. I think there's sort of this percolating subplot that hasn't been getting a lot of attention because this has been a rebuilding team that's really young and has had a bunch of cheap players and hasn't really had a need to be a cap team necessarily. But I think anyone that's really plugged in to what's going on in Buffalo has been sort of noticing that they haven't necessarily been spending maybe as much as some other teams. And you look at the cap space they have left, you'd like to think, all right, well, they actually are going to use that. That leaves them flexibility to add or get creative or be aggressive. Maybe don't. Maybe it's a different reality. Maybe there is an internal sort of benchmark there that they have to hit. It is interesting. Sean was kind of noting how, you know, Steve Yzerman hasn't talked yet, and kind of that speaks volumes a little bit. Kevin Adams was out there pretty much telling everyone who would listen that I'm trying to make trades. I'm trying to do stuff. Like, don't blame me. I'm falling a little bit short, as if that's supposed to make people feel better. But yeah, we'll see. I think it's a bit of a TBD there, but certainly an interesting situation to monitor. All right, John, who's next on your list now that we got Sean's first pick out of the way?
Well, let's go from some subpar vibes to immaculate vibes in Nashville. I mean, we're however many minutes into the show and we haven't brought them up. It's just a continuation of what Trotz and Brunette have done since they took over there, what, 12 months ago or so. Huge improvement during the last season. You know, the offense was reimagined under Brunette. They just, after the whole Sphere thing, which is ironic given the NHL draft was just held there, after that whole drama with the U2 concert, just on a rocket ship, made the playoffs, looked good in the playoffs. And then now $111 million on four players. It's a lot of money, but this is a franchise that's done a whole lot of nothing for 25 years. Obviously, they went to the Cup final. I'm exaggerating, but in a lot of ways have been a typical kind of middling team that doesn't step up to the plate. Well, they did this time and, you know, took some marquee players out of some big markets, as in Stamkos and Marjessault. And they have, you know, arguably a top 10 prospect pool. They re-signed UC Saros and Carrier. You know, Trotz is the type of guy that seems to be happy to tell the world about his plans. And, you know, we heard previously that he told his amateur scouts to bet on high upside guys, and that makes a lot of sense to me. And then he wants to take shots at players on free agency. And like, that makes sense to me if it's done responsibly. And I think by and large, what they did in free agency was responsible. I mean, Brady Shea's contract, it's a little hefty, but given Nashville's history, where they're headed, the space they have, even though they're paying Duchesne and Tourist for their buyouts, it's just, I thought it all made sense. And you know, you don't want to get too caught up in like, oh, this team won the offseason, now they're a legitimate cup contender, but they're certainly better than they were a few days ago. Like, I think there's no denying that. And they are already on a nice trajectory. So the Predators, as everyone I'm sure in the hockey world has already said already, had a really strong week there, even if you go back to the draft.
Yeah, we've been on this beat for some time here on the PDO cast. Sean, you and I in particular have spoken a bunch of times about the Predators, and I was particularly obviously captivated by the way they were playing under Andrew Brunette this year in his first season coaching this team, and how they the stylistic changes they made. But I thought they were approaching a very interesting path, particularly kind of crossroads moment as an organization, right? Because they had a bounce back, they made the playoffs, but also they had this trade chip in UC Saros. We wanted to see what they do with him. They've got this AHL team that had the 19 game winning streak, made it to the semifinals of the AHL playoffs, has a bunch of former first round picks on it that I'm sure are hoping to be on the team here on the Predators soon. And so I was very curious to see how they consolidated this success they had this past year as an organization from top to bottom. And they answered our questions, right? We knew last year that Barry Trotz was trying to be aggressive in trading Askarov and at the draft in Montreal and trying to be active. And we saw him bring in O'Reilly and Shannon, all those guys. Well, they sort of took that and then doubled down even further here. They extend Saros. They retain Carrier, as you said, John. They obviously sign Stamkos, Marchessault, and Shea. Is it wise long-term? We'll see. Probably not, based on the ages of those guys, especially when they're going to be making significant money into their 35, 36, 37-year-old seasons. Is it really fun? Hell yeah, brother. Sign me up. I'm very excited about this. I'm looking forward to watching this team. I think there's any number of storylines. So I'm really excited. And it is especially impressive to have retained this kind of flexibility to go out and spend this much when, as you noted, they have $12 million in dead cap space this coming season as well, right? So we'll see how it goes. But man, I thought particularly the caliber of forwards they brought in last year, they were such a volume team. They were third in the league in like slot shots, inner slot shots by Sportlogic. But they were sort of middle of the pack in actual scoring because they just didn't have a lot of shooting talent. They weren't very efficient with it beyond their top line of Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Nyquist, really. And so now you bring in Stamkos' shot, especially on the power play, Marchessault and all the scoring he did last year, especially at 5-on-5. I think it opens up a whole new set of possibilities for them. I wouldn't go so far as to say they're an immediate contender by any means, but they certainly got better and they're going to be really fun to watch next year.
Yeah. And also, like, the shoe is still going to drop on Askarov. Like, let's be clear on that. At some point, obviously when we did this back at the trade deadline, I was pushing, before I made fun of the newspaper industry, I was pushing for New Jersey. I was pushing for New Jersey to trade for him. But that shoe's still going to drop because Askarov is, I've talked to the kid and I know who his agency is. He wants to be a starting goalie sometime in the NHL within 2 to 3 years. That's not happening with Juuse Saros signed for 8 years. Scott Wedgwood signed for 2 years this year, next year. Like, it feels like that Askarov chip is going to drop at some point, if not during this season, at least like sooner than later. So there's another move at play possible here for Nashville. It's which makes them even like the way they play is fun and exciting. I like them a lot. It also keeps them really interesting because we always know there's this pending chip, right? We knew at the Sphere teams were calling about Askarov, and like Barry Trotz basically was giving the answer of like, if you give me a top five pick, yes. But part of that is he's got the runway to wait for some team to get desperate to trade for Askarov. And that's when I believe that deal will drop, whenever that is, because Askarov will be signed for this year. He'll be an RFA next. So they still have time to make that work. It's also a team where you look at what happened with that Milwaukee team. And I watched that team live two or three times this year when they played Grand Rapids in the playoffs. When you give out these contracts, you're going to have some guys in the long-term build here. Like, you're basically going to have to completely replace your bottom two lines probably with guys from Milwaukee within the next 18 months or so, because that's what you've set up. And they're set up well with how Milwaukee's playing to do that. So while will these older deals age? Probably not, but at least in the next year, 2-3 years, it's well set up. The other like thing that's just like, you think about like the big winner of free agency, and I got to give like Colby Guy credit for Pal in Florida for quote tweeting this, pointing this out to me. Like, I saw like a projected lines from NHL Network for this Predators team, and it had Tommy Novak playing between Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault. Like, that's the real winner of free agency right there. It's like Tommy Novak is now going to just, if that's actually the place he's going to eat. So, I mean, I love what Nashville's done because they're exciting on the ice, and I don't think this is going to all bottom out in 2 years. I think there is a plan in place.
I mean, yeah, the PDO cast stay winning. Not only that, but I did a show with Shayna Goldman right before the draft of free agency, and we talked about the Predators and why they were my number one team to watch this summer, and they certainly didn't disappoint in that regard. Do you want to break all these guys down a little bit? I think that, you know, the Marchessault had a phenomenal year last year. He scored so many goals. And obviously what he's done the past year, couple of years, kind of speaks for itself. I think he's going to be phenomenal on this team. I got really excited when that first initial news broke that he was going to go to the Devils before the Predators kind of swooped in the last minute and seemingly stole him from them. Shea, I'm a bit more skeptical just because of the couple extra years. I know he's a bit younger than those forwards. Any defenseman, we're going to talk about Pesci later when we talk about New Jersey. I'm not sure what these guys are going to look like when you take them outside of Carolina, just because it's such a unique defensive system. Now, I have a bit of added confidence because part of Andrew Burnett's system and the genius of it is it's just going to incentivize and encourage guys to move north-south and get involved, particularly from the back end off the rush and utilize their skating. And that's Brady Shea's biggest strength at this point, right? So I think that fit is going to be there. Let's talk about Stamkos. And we can talk about it from Tampa Bay's perspective as well while we're here, because that was obviously a big storyline in terms of the contract offer they gave him and then kind of how the two parties split up. I'll let either of you guys go here. How are you kind of feeling about that, and where do things stand with you right now in terms of how that ended in Tampa Bay and kind of what his outlook is like at this point of his career heading to Nashville?
Well, I'd say the first thing that comes to mind is that it sure seems like the NHL is becoming a little more cutthroat. Like, we obviously know all about Vegas, you know, their whole history is filled with these hard decisions, but whether it's what's going on with Jacob Trouba right now with the Rangers or Stamkos, you know, reportedly getting lowballed by a team that drafted him way back when. And, you know, if you look through his contract history, he hasn't been really overpaid. You would think there'd be some loyalty there as far as how the NHL usually operates. But Julian Brisebois, you know, for him to keep the train going here, you know, maybe had to activate that cutthroat side of him. If we're picking Gensel or Stamkos, I mean, I'm picking Gensel at this point in his career. So, like, in terms of
that's not a controversial take, though. Anyone that watches.
Putting the personal stuff aside,
yeah,
that's the right choice. I'm not quite sure what to think of, like, the whole picture of what Tampa did. Like, you know, you have Gensel coming in, Moser, McDonough, if you go back a little bit, Gergensen's, Geeky, Atkinson, but then you're losing, obviously, Stamkos, Sergachev, Janot, whatever, DeHaan, whatever. Like, Sergachev is the one guy there where I go, are they going to regret that? Obviously, he has that big ticket, so financially, no, it made everything work. And I also wonder, like, going back to the personal level, like, does this disrupt the room? It's hard to say. You know, Hedman re-signs, so he can't be that pissed off. But they seem like a team that's really close. So I don't know if that rocks things up or if everyone just looks around and goes, that's business and let's move on.
Go ahead. Well, let me just make this point.
Yeah.
Because, listen, Stamkos is 35 and he showed, in my opinion, like, serious signs of decline last year. And he was phenomenal in the playoff series, as short as it was, against Florida, right? He scored the 5 goals, a lot of them in, like, vintage Stamkos fashion. He can still clearly rip it. He was in about as good of a spot as you can be with that skill set, just kind of standing at the circle waiting for the best passer in the league to serve it up on a silver platter for you. So I'm sure he'll still score a bunch of power play goals in Nashville. It'll probably be a bit tougher sledding for him, maybe fewer clean looks the way he had last year in Tampa Bay. I get the argument of, like, he's a franchise legend. He'd been there for so long. I think there is legitimate merit and value to, like, having a full career there and keeping him there and sort of having him retire and all of that stuff. They've already won 2 cups, made a bunch of finals appearances. They've had as much success as you could ask for during this era. So it certainly would be understandable. I thought Julian Brisebois made a very fair point, though, right? He's like they're not trying to reminisce here. They're trying to win another cup. I still don't think this set of moves necessarily ensures that. I think they have a lot of work to do. I think ultimately they're going to be restricted in how far they can go. Like, we saw, they couldn't really even meaningfully compete against that Florida team in round one. And I still don't think they can, but at least this gives them a bit of a better chance because Gensel's 5 years younger, a significantly better 5-on-5 producer at this point of his career. And so I get it. It's like, it's a tough decision, but this is a business. And if you're trying to compete for a Stanley Cup moving forward and not just celebrate the ones you've already won, this is the way you do it. Maybe optically it didn't work out the way they envisioned, but I think the end result is probably the right one for Tampa Bay.
No, and I agree with that. I think one of the things we get caught in so far is, and this is like a sports thing, hockey's the one sport of the big four, right, where you can't be a human victory cigar. Right. I spent a lot of time in Dallas. Right. And I didn't cover the NBA, but One of the things about like them having that like year of Dirk Nowitzki playing his final year was if he didn't play well, it's okay. Only six of the 12 guys like actually impact the lineup. In baseball is a 25-man roster. You could not like in the NFL, you could like the NHL is the one league where you can't basically just carry someone around and be like, oh, well, we'll just sub them in late and they'll wave to the crowd. Like, I think that's so sometimes, but the NHL has like forgotten that sometimes. Like the NHL is such a well, we're a loyalist league, and sometimes like that. Like I know because from my time in Dallas, I remember when Joe Nieuwendyk was the GM who let Mike Modano go to Detroit. That was one of his reasons for it. It's like, look, I can't just let him, like, he was old, like he declined. I can't just give him a, I can't hide him. He has to play. And I think that's something where we have to make sure we remember that in a hockey perspective, where it's not like any other sport where these franchise legends can just kind of be a practice player, be that. Like, you actually have to play. And I think that's something we just need to kind of remember here, just from a media coverage of it. I think that comes up. And then, so, like, you had to move on at some point, right? And is it, was it, does it feel harsh? Yes. But at the same time, if I told a Tampa fan at the deadline, right, if you could trade Jake Guentzel for Steven Stamkos 1-for-1, you would have done it. And that's where I sit on this.
Yeah, I think Stamkos can still be a very productive player. He scored a bunch of goals last year.
Oh, and yeah, and I'm not saying that he can't. I'm just
No,
saying
of
like,
course.
you
I'm
need him
just.
taking up that much cap space. It's you. So you
Well,
made your, you made, yeah,
I'm going to
go
reinforce it. Like, he had the
ahead.
same number of 5-on-5 goals as Nick Paul on the same team last year, right? Like, he's just not, the name recognition is not the player he necessarily is right now. I will say the big winner here is Jake Guentzel, because not only does he get to now ride shotgun with Nikita Kucherov and enjoy all the fruits of that, he also got this $63 million deal where $53 million of it are in signing bonuses as well. So he's sitting
Ooh.
pretty. Now,
Ooh, yeah.
ultimately, I think we're going to see a lot of this season of like Kucherov and Guentzel, they combine for another brilliant goal. It's the fourth one they've created tonight as Tampa Bay cuts the deficit to 8-5. Like, it's going to be a lot of that because this team still has a lot of holes, certainly. But I can't wait, just from an entertainment value perspective, to watch those two guys play together to close the loop on the national part of it. We'll talk more about the state of the Central right now, because we're going to talk about teams like Dallas, certainly, and Utah as well. But this division has improved quite a bit, especially in contrast to the Pacific division. So Nashville loading up and beefing up here. You watched that round one series against Vancouver, right? And the lack of goal scoring ability was pretty clear. And so now you added two guys who are certainly going to help you do that. And I can't help but like it. All right, let's take our first break here. When we come back, we'll jump right back into it and talk about all of our takeaways from the start of free agency and all of the NHL news over the past week. You're listening to the Hockey Podcast streaming on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back here on the Hockey Podcast, joined today by Sean Shapiro and John Mattis. Fellas, I think it's my turn. We kind of lost track. We did 35 minutes or so in part one of this mega free agency extravaganza, and we've covered like two teams or three teams so far. So I think you both had great suggestions for your teams you're interested in. I think it's my turn. Let's do the LA Kings. Here's my first question for you. What on earth are the LA Kings doing right now? Because I get the frustration for an organization that gets built up over time when you essentially just keep running into the same obstacle the way they have with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl the past 3 years, right? The first year, I thought they legitimately were right there with them, if not the better team. And ultimately, Connor McDavid's heroics in game 6 and 7 of that series were just proved to be the difference. The past 2 years, they were outclassed. This year in particular, I was very critical of their performance after that series. I just thought they really had nothing to offer in the way of like offensive creativity or solutions or potential problems they could even pose to Edmonton defensively. And it was highly alarming to me. And then Rob Blake goes out and he speaks pretty critically of the team afterwards, right? And he's like, all right, there needs to be changes. I don't like the way we're playing. And what he does is He brings back the coach, right? He removes the interim tag from Jim Hiller and makes him the full-time coach. He does the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade for Darcy Kuemper, which is understandable. It was kind of his last chance to get out from under that contract. But then he goes, he trades a second and a fourth for Tanner Giroux, who has one more year at 2.665 and 13 goals over the past 2 years combined. He gives Warren Fogel a three-year deal, which whatever, it's fine. It's the AAV on it isn't too big. But then he goes and gives this four-year deal to Joel Edmondson, which was one of the more puzzling deals of July 1st, in my opinion. I couldn't believe that's the figure that he wound up coming in at. And then to find out the teams like the Bruins and Blues, I think, were like also in on him. I was like, oh my God, this is wasn't just the Kings. So that was the extent of what they did here. And they essentially went from this organization that I was very excited about a couple of years ago, right? Had this great outlook, this young, exciting team with a bunch of top prospects on the way that had essentially run away to be a beast in the West. And now you look at what they have to show for it. And I can't help but feel like it's incredibly disappointing. And I think their trajectory is pointing even further down now after this summer compared to where they were after that round one defeat. And to me, that's, I don't know, it's kind of inexcusable. And I think Kings fans certainly have every right to be very frustrated with the job Rob Blake and co have done here.
Yeah, they haven't developed well, right? They had that down cycle where they got all these picks. Obviously, a guy like Byfield has popped. Brandt Clark seems to be on his way. But, like, you know, Turcotte, that's a huge swing and a miss. Part of it is kind of not their fault with the injuries and whatnot. But they've sort of missed in that sense. And then that doesn't leave much margin for error with, you know, acquiring Dubois, it not working, you know, selling him, getting Kuemper back, better than nothing, I guess. But, like, you know, what are we doing here? And then, as you mentioned, you go into the offseason and you start kind of, I guess, doubling down on the identity that wasn't working originally. And also, I feel like teams can maybe make one poor signing in the offseason where you go, okay, you overpaid, or, you know, there's an aging veteran you gave too much term to. But I feel like you look at all their signings and it's like, at best, I'm giving like a C+ to Warren Fogel, and that's kind of their best signing, something like that. So it's tough sledding, and I do feel bad for Kings fans because, I mean, they started off this whole sort of refresh started off so promising with Kopitar and Doughty continuing to play at a fairly high level, and they've continued to do that. But along the way, as the teams tried to build around them, it's been, you know, misstep after misstep. They've made a couple good moves here. Okay, now we're going to make five bad moves. And it just, I don't know. It's also a bit awkward because it seems like Blake is on a short leash, or should be, yet he's still making these moves that involve term. So things are not sunny in LA.
The 2 years ago now, this was the right side of their defensive depth chart within their organization. Drew Doughty, Matt Roy, Sean Durzi, Sean Walker, Brandt Clark, Brock Faber, and Jordan Spence. Only Doughty and Clark and Spence are left here. They don't have anything to really show for it. It was sort of the talk of the league at the time, that at a position that's so thin, they had this embarrassment of riches. They didn't really leverage it to their advantage. They lost Matt Roy here. We're going to talk more about him when we talk about the Capitals. I just ultimately think this is you're right, it's a kind of a cautionary tale about timing and development for an organization and kind of when they chose to strike and then how they approach that. I hate what they've become. I could not stand watching them last year, and I can't see it really getting much worse here. I think they've sort of acknowledged about the fact that, at least from a player perspective, right? We like heard their frustration about the way they're playing and how defensively oriented it was. So maybe there's reason for optimism that'll open up a little bit, but I don't know. Like, you just watch those series against the Oilers, and I can tell you for a fact that toughness and intensity were not the reasons why they lost those series. It was a lack of offensive talent, and they did nothing to address that this offseason. They replaced Roy and Arvidsson with Fogel and Joel Edmondson. So they got less offensively talented, in my opinion, and it's going to be very tricky for them to bounce back from this. Sean, what are your thoughts on the Kings and kind of how they've approached this and this whole saga for them over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, the move is basically double down on, it's hard to win in the, like, it's the thing where, like, every single GM at some point will tell you, right? Like, it's hard to win in the playoffs. It's a different type of game, all that junk, right? And this just felt like This felt like this was if like Rob Blake was going to point and explain why he made these moves, it'd be like, well, we just need to be good enough to get in, and then anything can happen. That's how we won two cups, right? And it's like learning from it's taking it's cherry picking the wrong lesson, really, from past history. It's cherry picking the wrong lesson from how many teams will look and say, oh, the Panthers were a tough team to play against. Yes, the Panthers were a tough team to play against, but that's a really damn good offensive team as well. So like it's just it feels a lot like that to me, where it's like, all right, we're not getting over the hump, so we're just going to continue trying to build a bunker that makes it harder for other teams to get through, and hopefully we survive. And I don't know if you lie to yourself on the inside of like I don't know within the walls of the Kings offices, you lie to yourself and say it's the right way, or you're like, well, we realize that we're playing at best to try and hope that maybe we get in and maybe we are a tough out. And that's just such a terrible way to go about building a roster. Just I don't get it at all.
Yeah, it's frustrating, and especially like you'd think if there was the door left open a little bit for all right, we're gonna have a philosophical change in the way we play based on the moves they made. I can't say they've really given themselves the opportunity to do so or armed themselves with the talent to do so. So we'll see how that goes. But it's tough, and I thought that was just their general approach on what they did on July 1st was one of the more baffling ones for me around the league. Sean, I think you're up with your next team or a situation that
Ooh.
caught your eye.
Yeah, I like looking. Let's talk Utah. I mean, you go from having as of I think we went into day one draft day with zero defensemen signed at all to I think they actually did some decent work in getting some things done on the defensive side there.
They certainly did, and they did it on what day two of the draft, right? Where they acquired
Yeah.
both Sergachev and Marino, like seemingly minutes apart. John, it felt like not to twist the knife even further, but it felt like Ryan Smith came in and essentially spent more money in that 10-minute span than the Coyotes had in like the previous 5 years combined. Because not only the AAVs, but if you look a little bit even further than that, Sergachev's actually makes 11.5 million in actual salary. Both this coming year and the next one. Marino makes 6.15 million above his AAV as well, and then they give Dersey the 4-year extension for 6 million per as well. So just in those three alone, that's like a significant amount of money they've invested in the position. And it's all guys who are in their mid-20s, right, in their prime, good players. I think we like all three. And so yeah, with this young forward group they have as well, right, we love Keller, Michelli, Gunther. Go on the lot down the line with all the young guys they've drafted. It's a very intriguing group. If anything, I was a bit surprised that they didn't go out and make some sort of a move for another forward. I think until we get some sort of clarity on what's ultimately going to happen with Mitch Marner, they are going to be linked to that situation because that makes a lot of sense for them. And they are one of the few teams that kind of has the resources to pretty easily facilitate it. They still have a bunch of cap space to do so. But we'll see. There might be another move for them to come. I would have liked to see them add another forward. But if you're going to talk about a team that has good goaltending, now a bunch of in their prime defenders, and a really young, fun, highly talented forward group, there's a lot to work with there.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what this looks like on the ice because it's one thing to acquire Sergachev, Marino, Coles on the back end too. Like they have a real blue line now. Kesselring's decent, Dersey obviously. So I'm interested in that, and I just find it's fascinating that, as you mentioned, they spent that much money. They had 40 million going into the day, July 1, to spend cap space. Or I guess it wouldn't have been July 1 because they'd made some moves at the draft, but they had 40 million going in the draft. Now they're at 15 million left. So they made some significant moves there. And Ryan Smith is clearly, he means business here. And, there's obviously danger here of kind of pressing fast forward too quickly. And I don't think that Bill Armstrong is necessarily doing that with these moves, but there is sort of, I guess, a natural timeline here that they're on where they made progress on the ice last year, didn't make the playoffs. Things were better to start the year than to end the year as far as the standings page. But they have their core is quite young. They draft TJ Aginla. They have a guy like Simachev coming on the blue line soon. Like, they're not quite there as far as putting it all together, in terms of, you know, who's on the NHL roster, who's part of the core, are they all in the same place at the right time, or all in the right place at the right time. But this is a step. This is a step, and I like, honestly, it's refreshing, because there was, what, a decade there when they were the punching bag of the league, and I think this is at least a first statement that they will no longer be that, and that, you know, Utah can be a desirable place to be, because, you know, the teams that win the cup, what's in common with all those teams? They have good owners. I mean, there's probably one we can find along the way since the salary cap started, but I'd say 90% of them are, you look at them and go, they spend and they allow their GM to get out of a bad contract that they agreed to a couple of years earlier, and they move on, and they have great facilities. All that stuff is really important, and I think that Utah is at least trending in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, they got 23 million in cap space, I believe, last checked, a bunch of still seconds to work with and draft capital, of course. And so whether it's Marner or Natchez or Ehlers or any forward that we've kind of heard that's reportedly available, I think they're players in that and seem interested at least in actually improving their team and fielding a competitive NHL lineup for once, which, as you're right, I think that's the big story here. So I think certainly very exciting for them. I think, John, I think you're next up here. Who's next on your list?
Let's talk about San Jose, like keeping it southern here. I liked how kind of feisty they were. The bar was extremely low. I mean, the team that they were icing last year was borderline pathetic as far as trying to win hockey games.
Borderline? Borderline?
That is a very generous interpretation of the 23-24 San Jose Sharks.
But so you get this grand slam, you know, in Celebrini. You pick Dickinson as a you know, pillar of the blue line, the future. You have Will Smith coming on board, and they're not just going to be surrounded by a bunch of AHLers or guys on expiring deals. You know, Toffoli strikes me as the right veteran to bring in, where he's still useful. He's not getting paid like an exorbitant amount, where it's kind of awkward. And the contract isn't like crazy long, and he's got, you know, ties to the local area. I thought that was just like perfect as far as if they're gonna sign a guy that they don't really need because they're not trying to win, like that's the guy. You know, bringing Wennberg, Goodrow, Wallman, Dellandrea, like those are NHLers. And it's, like I said, a low bar, but I think it's really important that they're at least slightly competitive next year. You don't want Celebrini, if he does in fact sign and come on board, you don't want him to be in the environment that a lot of first overall picks end up in, where things start escalating in terms of losses, and just every night is such a slog. So it seems like they're into a new stage. It's not a stage where they're going to get to even the 25th spot out of 32 teams on the standings page, but maybe they'll get to like 30. I was actually thinking about this. Who's the worst team on paper right now? Is it still San Jose? Is it Chicago? I feel like Calgary is sneaky bad. Because there's no blatant tankers left, assuming that like San Jose and Chicago are at least trying to make like minor steps. I don't see a team like really nosediving right now. What about you guys?
Yeah, we'll see. I think your description of the San Jose Sharks there is just further proof, if anyone needed it, that the Eastern media does not stay up to watch the Western Conference. Because I actually did watch some San Jose Sharks games, and
And it was, in fact, pathetic.
it was, yeah, I would have used some different terms than you did. But no, you're right. I think when the Toffoli news came out, right, because a bunch of teams, including contenders, were certainly interested in him, I was like, oh, I mean, it makes sense. Listen, like, he's got the California connection, right? I think the idea of playing with Macklin Celebrini should be very intriguing for a goal scorer, if you want to elongate your career and get another payday down the road. And I was like, man, I wonder why he signed there. And then I'm like, oh, he got 24 million. That makes sense. I would have done so as well. Yeah, I mean, they certainly move closer in a direction to like competency and just like having actual NHL players. And I'm very excited, assuming we do see Celebrini and Smith playing for them. I'm really curious to see them at this level. I think they're still going to be pretty bad, especially you look at that blue line, like Jake Wallman immediately became their best defenseman, in my opinion, depending on your mileage of Mario Ferraro. And so that is kind of everything you need to know about the situation. So they're certainly going to be bad, but that's totally fine. I guess my one quibble with it, and ultimately I think that's kind of the price of doing business when you're a team like this, you're going to have to tack on extra money in years to convince someone to come and sign with you. I don't love when teams like this, I said the same thing about the Ducks the past couple of years when they were signing guys like Killorn and Strome. I don't love when these rebuilding teams give the extra years on the back end to these veterans. I'd much prefer you utilize your cap space to just give them monster short-term deals that come with crazy AAVs, but at least it'll expire soon and you can have more flexibility in trading them at deadlines. And if you decide to go that route, obviously it takes sign off from ownership, right? Like, it's like, all right, we're going to pay Tyler Toffoli $12 million this year. Maybe the owner is not very down to do that. So I think that's certainly a consideration there, but I'd prefer that rather than giving them those third and fourth years on the deal. But we'll see. By then, by 2027, we'll see what the landscape's like, and hopefully the salary cap will be even higher, and so it won't be as much of an issue. Sean, how do you feel about what the Sharks did? And kind of, you can lump the Blackhawks in here as well, because, you know,
yeah,
similar sort of vibe in terms of their approach and just trying to bring in guys who can give their young superstars a chance to actually succeed and not just immediately drown.
I mean, I don't mind the Toffoli deal on the length, because it's kind of a one-off of, like, okay, Wenberg's tied, signed for two. You get Granlund's $5 million comes off the cap next year. You get even Vlasic is only signed for two more years. I think there is, and on top of that, they've got a ton of dead space too that will eventually come off too. So I think they are at least well positioned for within 2 years when it's time to start posturing for Celebrini's first real contract, the first non-ELC, and Smith's and everything like that. So I think they're positioned that way. The thing I like about what San Jose has done, and just kind of talking to people around there and being at the draft, was like, I like that they have essentially, and it might work, it might not, who knows, but I like that they've gone and they've been like, okay, we're going to give a young coach a chance to grow with this. I like that, like, Versovsky's 36 or something like that. So I like the fact that they've basically brought him in, and as an organization, they've decided it's okay. It's, if this team is going to struggle, the coach and the players are going to get through this. And I think we talk all the time about turnover and everything like that, and all the coaches, and we see those lists, and the people who are the longest lasting on those lists are it's the Brendan Moores, it's the John Coopers, it's situation in Colorado, it's Jared Bednarz. It's guys who got their first job and got that chance to go through all that. Now, I'm not saying Ryan Warsawski is the next Jared Bednar, but like, think about what Jared Bednar went through in Colorado with that roster and then was allowed to go through the rebuild. Coaches in the NHL get recycled so quickly, rarely do you have to go through the downtimes. And I like that San Jose has at least paired and accepted this downtime with, we're going to let a coach go through this. So that's what I like what San Jose's done. And we'll see where it goes. I think they're going to be awful still this year, and that's okay. But I think when you look at the long-term build, I think they at least have done a couple right things with allowing the coach and the young core to combine, similar to what Colorado did when they let McKinnon and Bednar essentially play through one of the worst rosters in recent memory then.
Yes. All right, fellas, let's jump to another break here. We're actually going to shift over to part two of this two-part podcast. So if you're listening on the PDOcast feed, it'll be there for you. Pop in there. We're going to keep the conversation going with Sean Shapiro and John Mattis and talking about all the stuff we saw during the free agency period. You're listening to the Hockey PDOcast streaming on the Sportsnet Radio Network.